Good Weekend Talks is a new podcast from the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age.
It's a deep dive, once a week, into Australia's definitive stories.
On Good Weekend Talks,
we take a long-form look at the people,
places and issues
that matter to you.
Devour the issue in depth.
And learn the backstory and craft behind some of Good Weekend's most popular pieces.
It's your favourite magazine, brought to life for your ears, your heart and your soul.
Subscribe now, wherever you get your podcasts.
From the newsrooms of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, this is Please Explain. I'm Tori Maguire and it's Friday, March 27. For the duration of the COVID-19 crisis, Please Explain is coming to you 5 days a week. As of this afternoon, Australia has recorded 3,050 cases and 13 deaths. I'm joined now by our North America correspondent, Matthew Knott. Matt Knott, thanks for joining me again on Please Explain.
No worries at all.
We have woken up in Australia this Friday morning to horrible news out of New York. They've had 100 people die overnight, our time. There is extraordinary footage on the New York Times website shot by a doctor in a Queens hospital, just showing that they are totally unprepared. They don't have the right personal protection equipment. They've had to hire a refrigerator truck and park it out the back of the hospital as a makeshift morgue. How big a epicenter problem is New York right now?
Yeah, New York really is the focus of all the attention here. In the United States, at first, coronavirus was something that started here on the West Coast in Washington State, which is on the other side of the country. But then over the past few weeks, it's become clear that New York is going to be the big hotspot, as Donald Trump would say. And it's got vastly, vastly more cases, mostly in New York City, than anywhere else in the country. Now, part of that, Governor Andrew Cuomo thinks, is that it was circulating there for a long time before anyone knew. So many people are flying in and out of New York and traveling there from overseas. And also it's such a dense city with people living on top of each other, traveling in the subway, breathing on each other, that it's the worst environment because it can travel so fast there. And it's only going to keep getting worse, at least for the next few weeks.
This doctor made the point, and we'll just listen to what she had to say.
I don't have the support that I need and even just the materials that I need physically to take care of my patients. And it's America, and we're supposed to be a first world country.
So, Matt, listening to what that doctor had to say, it's amazing to read in the Herald and the Age this morning a story by you about how Donald Trump has never been more popular.
Yeah, it's kind of a split screen reality that I found hard to deal with when you watch what Donald Trump is saying. You have to remind yourself to look outside and remember that everything is shut down and closed because what he's talking about doesn't necessarily reflect what's happening out here. In the lived reality as we know it. Now, his popularity has received a bit of an increase as the crisis has happened. It hasn't been as much as past presidents have received in national emergencies like 9/11, and it's not as much as what some state governors receive. Some state governors are getting, you know, approval around 80%. Trump is getting at best around 60% for his handling of the crisis. But I think there is just a general sense, and this is in other countries too, that people want to get behind their leaders at a time when things are so bad and so serious.
And is there a sense of sort of isolation and populism in part of this, Matt, that sort of make America great again view of the world? Donald Trump keeps referring to the Chinese virus or the Wuhan virus. And I wondered if that sort of appealed to an American sense of exceptionalism.
There's that element to it that the president and his allies are really framing this as a foreign problem that has infected America and a problem that you can solve by blocking people coming in rather than something that is circulating throughout the country. Also, just the fact is that the places that have been most affected so far are very democratic and are very hostile to Trump. Seattle, Los Angeles, New York, big cities like this where the virus spreads, a very democratic. Trump is very unpopular there, whereas more rural areas where his supporters are, the virus hasn't necessarily even got there. So you're seeing two very different sides of America. The political realities are mapped onto the spread of the virus.
How technically is it being managed there? Here in Australia, they've formed a national cabinet, and while there are clear tensions in that national cabinet and there could be about to be some splits on the way the states deal with it, to this point, the states and the federal government have been united on the approach. In the United States, is it the response being run by the governors of the states, or is it being run centrally out of the White House?
No, very much so. It's being run by the states and also, in some cases, a city mayors. We saw the other day Trump talking about he would like to have the U.S. economy reopened by Easter. Well, the fact is, it's not his decision. All the main decisions about issuing stay-at-home orders and, you know, locking cities down and closing businesses, they've all been taken by local authorities. Really, all that the federal government has done is issue guidelines and recommendations. It's going to be up to the governors and the mayors about when normal life resumes.
Does that mean that it's different in different states and different cities? Are some more locked down than others?
Oh, yeah, very much so. You know, New York and California, you know, went very early with stay-at-home orders, basically telling people not to leave. It's different in other states, in some more rural states, even in states like Texas, say, which is huge and has some big cities, but some more rural areas. It's on a county by county basis. So you might see big cities like Houston have tough restrictions, but then out in the country, people are moving around as if it's normal. So that makes sense in such a big country with such different ways of living. It does make sense in a lot of cases.
So where you are based in Washington, D.C., what are the current restrictions? Are you allowed out?
In Washington, you're allowed out. You're allowed to circulate freely. Some businesses are still open, but it's pretty much a closure of all non-essential businesses for the past couple of weeks. You know, no bars, restaurants are doing takeout only, no gyms, no schools for a couple of weeks. They've been closed. So, yeah, it's very, very quiet and shut down here, but people are running around, they're going for walks. There haven't been that many cases or fatalities here compared to somewhere like New York. So there's not the same feeling of anxiety that you get elsewhere in the country.
You have spent a bit of time in New York earlier this week. What's the mood and atmosphere like there?
I was really shocked to get out of the train at Penn Station and walk around Midtown Manhattan. I lived there for a couple of years, and you're used to it as such a thriving, dynamic place, and it's a complete wasteland with no one there in Midtown Manhattan. I know a friend who's going to hire a car to drive around for the first time, because you would never really want to drive in New York, but now the streets are completely empty. Around Times Square, where there would be millions of tourists, it's really now just homeless people, to be honest, and some people passing through. It has the feel really of a city under siege, and the seriousness of the outbreak there. Most people I know there really aren't leaving the house much, except to go for one walk a day.
Is there a big police presence? I mean, Manhattan has always had a big police presence, but is it more obvious now?
Yeah, it's hard to tell if you just notice it more because there's less of everything else, but there's definitely police. They're talking about shutting down some of the roads, shutting down traffic so that you can give people more space to walk around. And so you do see police checkpoints now shutting off some of the traffic. And you will need police to ensure that there isn't crime, because there are just fewer people around. There's fewer eyes on the street.
Mm. Matt, I put this same question to your colleague, our London correspondent, Bevan Shields, when I spoke to him on the podcast last week. Journalists don't like being at the centre of the story, but all of us are in this, whether we like it or not. You've had to make the decision about 2 weeks ago whether to stay in the United States or come home to Australia, knowing that you're probably not going to be able to come home for quite a number of months. How do you feel about that?
To be honest, it was a pretty easy decision, just because I feel like this is a huge moment in history. It's completely unexpected. It's not, the year isn't going as I thought. No, we're in a presidential election year, but that has all receded into the background. You know, technically, there's still a Democratic primary going and no one's talking about it because it doesn't matter. This is the only thing that matters. So, no, when something big happens, you'll have to stay and cover it while not putting your health unnecessarily at risk. It will be a shame that people who were going to come and visit can't now. But yeah, when something big happens, you cover it. Mm. That's what we do.
So speaking of the election, how are they going to conduct an election under these circumstances?
It's very unclear. It really depends. The election is in November. It's unclear what the state of the virus is going to be by then. Democrats have been pushing to make it a lot easier for people to, say, vote by mail, which isn't possible in a lot of states, so that people don't have to go to a polling place and interact with others. That's not probably going to get any support from Republicans. This is unfortunate, but there's a divide. Republicans don't necessarily want to make it easier for everyone to vote because they think that will disadvantage them in the election. So I think it's just going to go ahead as normal. Joe Biden has said we always have elections. He wants it to go ahead because it's a dangerous precedent, a lot of people think, to suspend democracy even when something so serious is happening.
Well, Matt, thanks so much for joining me again. I'm sure we will talk to you many times over the next few months.
No worries at all. Stay safe over there.
You too. Today's episode of Please Explain was produced by Leah Samoglu and Amelia Maguire. The journalists, editors, photographers, producers and tech team at The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald are working tirelessly at the moment to cover the COVID-19 crisis factually, fairly and comprehensively. For coverage you can trust, visit our websites or buy our papers. To support our journalism, you can subscribe via our homepages or just search, subscribe, The Sydney Morning Herald or The Age. I'm Tori Maguire. Thanks for listening.